Hello, and welcome to Season 3 of Medical Women Talking. I'm Jane Dacre, and in this season, I wanted to speak to more wonderful and inspiring medical women, including people who are early and mid-career. These women are all making a name for themselves in their respective fields. They're what I like to call rising stars and will be influencing all our futures.
Patrice Baptiste is a UCL graduate. She graduated in 2013, but she's had a slightly different career and is earlier on in her career than some of the other women that we've been talking to in these podcasts. So Patrice, welcome and thank you very much for joining me.
Hi, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. Always a pleasure speaking to you.
That's lovely. So now, can we just start by talking about your motivations and your career to date? So when did you decide to become a doctor and why?
Well, I decided quite early on, actually, about 4 or 5 years old. I'm not sure there was a specific kind of trigger or experience, but I always felt drawn to a medical career. And I think it was because of the cliche answers, really helping people. I always loved learning. I couldn't get enough of learning lots of different things. And I felt that medicine was well suited to who I was as a person. And that was my main kind of motivation, really.
So did you have any doctors in your family?
No, I didn't have any doctors. The only doctor I knew was my GP. I went to a comprehensive school. It was a very good school. If you look at the range of comprehensive schools at the time, but like most comprehensive schools, they don't have the tools to really support those students who want to get into medicine. So I didn't really have the networks that probably would have helped me more. But obviously, nonetheless, I did have a support network of some form, which obviously helped me to become a doctor.
So, getting into medical school from a comprehensive school is no mean feat, is it? You hear these days of how most of the kids that get into medical school come from private schools, not comprehensive schools. So you must have been doing something special. What was it?
I'd like to think so. I think I just worked really hard. I did a lot of research. I did a lot of things that I could add to my personal statement. I did a first aid course with St. John's Ambulance. I managed to get some work experience at a private hospital because my dad, he worked at a private hospital local to where we lived. And I spent some time in the lab there and spoke to some of the docs and things like that. So I think I could, and I'm quite a good communicator. So I think I was able to really rinse out my experiences on my personal statement. So I always say to students, make sure you really explain and draw out as much as you can from the experience that you have. So I think my personal statement really helped to just show all the things that I had done in my preparation to try and undertake a medical career. So I think that really helped.
And so you got in to UCL Medical School. What was it like?
It was good, challenging, interesting, a great experience. And I still miss UCL to this day. I think that's why I'm always keen to go back and get involved. Like with my secondary school, I always like to go back because I think it's that part of your life that you tend to kind of look back on and you remember the good times and just want to go back, really. But yeah, I mean, it was obviously intense. My lectures, were 9 to 5, and first couple of years, I know it's changed now, but the first couple of years were very heavy on lecture base and theory, which you tend to forget once you get into clinical medicine. So it was preclinical and clinical at the time, and it was really good, I guess, to get that foundation. But then it was really exciting to move on to the clinical years and actually start preparing and thinking, trying to think like a doctor. I made lots of good friends, and I tried to step out of the kind of medical bubble and try and engage with other societies and groups and people studying different degrees, which helped broaden my horizons and just extend my experiences.
You qualified and then decided to do GP. Why was that? What drove you to become a GP?
I didn't decide straight away. I think like most new graduates or most junior doctors early on in their career, you're not really sure what path to go down. I think there are a small group of people who are very confident in their decision to be a GP or be a cardiothoracic surgeon. But I think for the vast majority of people, they're not really sure. And I think it's all about also getting that exposure. So I was one of those people, I wasn't really sure. I enjoyed a lot of different things. So I really, at one point, wanted to be a cardiologist and I wanted to be a neurologist. I've done some research in both of those areas. But I couldn't really just narrow it down. And also when I looked at the training pathways, I thought, well, they're quite long actually. So maybe that isn't a positive. And just trying to, just feel my way and navigate really. So I did foundation year one and year two, and I had lots of, different experiences, and it was a real steep learning curve. And I think at the end of F2, I was really burnt out and I had to just take some time away. So I decided not to apply for a training program because one, I had no idea which one I would apply to, and two, because I was burnt out and I felt I needed a break.
Without sort of wanting to pry, how did you know you were burnt out? What was going on that made you feel burnt out?
I just felt really just exhausted. I think in physical sense, the emotional sense, psychological sense, I just felt exhausted. And like I was questioning my decision to study medicine, and I think the hours were long, and you're kind of just taught to just get on with it. And, at one point I was told just to man up and just this is what it is and just get on with it. And that's the
really, Who told you that?
Well,
what sort of person?
A fellow trainee, actually.
Really?
Not a senior, a fellow trainee. Like, just man up and just get on with it. I'm like, okay, I'm trying. And I think I'm quite a strong person. I think I have a very good work ethic. I don't think I give up easily, and I always want to put my all and give everything my 100%. So for me to, I think, to be burnt out and to be exhausted, I think says a lot. So I knew because I just wasn't myself, and I think a lot of that came from you want to dedicate all your time and energy to being a doctor, but then you're also a person, and being a doctor is just one part of who you are, one part of maybe your identity. And so I felt like I wasn't able to just do all the things that I really wanted to do, because when I finished my shift, I was really tired. I prioritized sleep and eating, and I didn't prioritize writing poetry or reading a book. I just felt I needed to just be well for the job. And obviously that takes a toll on you, because we're not robots, we're humans, and we've got wants and needs. So that's how I really knew I was burnt out. And I actually was very close to not completing F2 if it wasn't for a fellow UCL friend who said, you're so close, you've got a few weeks, just finish it, you have so many more opportunities open to you. And so I did have a short kind of time off, and then I went back a bit more energy and just tried to get to the finish line, which I did. And then I said I'll take a year out just to kind of reevaluate where I was really, and if I was going to carry on working as a doctor.
And you decided to come back, but in a different way, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So in my time out of the training, I met lots of other doctors who actually were feeling the same, really. I went to lots of events. I also went to lots of events that were not had nothing to do with medicine. And were just opening my mind, just taking a break and just getting back to who I was. And I realized that actually at the end of the day, I still want to be a doctor. I feel like I had so much more to give. And I had just started my career, and I felt like there was just so much more I wanted to achieve in medicine and as a doctor. Once I realized I still wanted to be a doctor, it was quite easy for me then, because I knew that I could then try and figure out and navigate what I was going to do next. So it was hard for me to kind of go back into training, but when I picked general practice, I think the setup of the training program in itself, where you've got scheduled time for scheduled teaching, and when I've been in general practice, GPs have always been very kind of, not the hospital doctors are not very nice, but they've always had a bit more time. I guess maybe the nature at the time of the job, they've always been very focused on teaching, and you get that a bit more one-to-one, I suppose. And it's just a very different setting. So I always kind of enjoyed my time in general practice. And like I said before, I hadn't really narrowed down a specialty. So general practice, and I think of myself as an all-rounder. So I think general practice kind of fit again with who I was, and it was all about work-life balance also. And with general practice, there's just so much you can do. It's a career in itself, but it's also a stepping stone and the foundation to other specialties like palliative medicine or occupational health. So I think there's so much you can do with it and so much flexibility. And it allows many people who are like myself, like creative or someone who maybe is a bit more business minded, to be able to integrate that all with one of their first passions, which is medicine. So yeah, so I chose general practice and still working as a GP.
and you talked about being creative. Tell me a little bit about that. What how does your creativity manifest itself?
I love writing. I love writing opinion pieces. I like writing poetry. I like just getting my thoughts out there on paper and just reflecting. I think I'm a very big reflector. A lot of my peers in GP training hated reflection, but I love reflection. I wrote very long, detailed cases that probably took my trainer a long time to read. But I like reflecting, and I think that's a big part of just my personality. So writing is a big part of, I guess, the creative outlet, and I find it very therapeutic. But also, I don't play the piano very well, but I like making music. I like playing the piano, like getting in the studio and just making little songs and things like that. I think I just like creating something new. I like to crochet, not very well, but you know, we like to do bits here and there. And I love reading. I love reading factual pieces. I love reading novels and just getting yourself lost and getting to know the characters. So I feel like as a creative, I just like to create. I like to create something new and create something from scratch.
So how do you find time to do that? Are you working? Have you cut down your sessions, or do you just are you just incredibly busy?
Oh, well, yeah. So I don't do that many sessions. I mean, I was doing six at one point, but I've reduced it by a couple of sessions. And I locum now. So I did try to be a salaried for a while. This year I tried again, but I just found that, again, I found it very restrictive. I like a bit more flexibility. So I find that locum, at least for now, and I guess we'll talk a bit about family life later on, but I find it works a bit where I am at the moment. But even before, when I was working full time in training, or when I was doing 5-6 sessions, I think you just make time for the things that you're passionate about in a way. And it's much easier if you're even working 3 days a week than 5 days in training to make time for things. So I think that's really how I do it. I just, like I said, I made a promise to myself also when I took a year out, that I would make sure I didn't lose the things that I really enjoyed doing. So I think maybe at the expense of some sleep sometimes, I do read. And I've also I've learned to do things in smaller steps. I think a lot of the time we want to maybe, say for example, we're reading a book and we want to, maybe once upon a time we read kind of 6 books in a month, but that's not possible anymore because of so many different things. So right now I read one chapter on a Sunday of a book, and I've managed to, I'm on my second book this year. I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot, but what does that matter? And I've read two more than I would have if I'd tried to just really put pressure on myself and aim for 5 books in a month. And like every year I always say to myself, I'm gonna try and do one activity and follow it through. So last year I crocheted a lovely scarf. Again, I don't think it was that good, but I'm proud of it. And this year I'm reading books, and I'm ahead actually for next year, because I've already read one book. Now I'm onto my second book, and I'm also writing a book. So yeah, I think it's taking things in small chunks and trying to set realistic expectations and prioritizing the things that you enjoy, and just not putting things off.
So if you take yourself back to whenever it was, 2015, when you were feeling burnt out, do you feel different now? Is this all working? What is it?
I feel different. I feel better within myself. But there's a theory, there's a few kind of vocational theories, and there's Super's theory of like vocational development. And you go through, he kind of says you go through different life stages. And, you know, there's a kind of the first stage when you're a child and you're not really sure, you want to be a doctor, but you don't really have the understanding and you don't know if your personality matches that. And as you get older and you live life, you're in maybe an exploratory stage. And then you're in establishment stage because you've got your career and you're just working and establishing yourself, and then decline and so on and so forth. So I feel like I'm still kind of exploring and establishing myself, although I have achieved so much and I've got my career now as a GP and lecturer and writer and things like that. But I'm still feeling and finding my way, which is great because it just opens you up to new opportunities, keeps things fresh and exciting. And we're always learning, like we say. So for me, I'm in a much better place, but I'm still feeling my way around. around.
So do you have an idea or an aspiration for where you would like to be in, say, 5, 10, 15 years time?
Yeah, I think at the moment, everything that I do around general practice is very kind of academic in a way. You know, I'm doing research, part of Medical Extra, and been funded by the NPS. I'm writing a book with Sound Publishing. I'm lecturing now, so I feel like I'm drawn more to academia. So maybe in 5 years, I'd like to transition, even if that's, I'm not sure about full time, but we'll see how it goes. Because I like to have a rough plan. I don't like to have very rigid goals. So in 5 years, I must be here. I must have done this. I like to have a rough kind of idea. I'm on this path and let's see where it takes me. So I'm on this academic path, lecturing, which I really enjoy. And I always love teaching. But let's see where it takes me. Yeah, let's see.
Fantastic.
You know, I go on to do more in academia, or if I pivot and do something else, and we'll see how it goes. But I just want to enjoy the process and just have fun, not put pressure on myself. I feel like I did that a lot early on, just trying to become a doctor, and even as a junior doctor, and trying to, you know, navigate which training pathway. I put a lot of pressure on myself, and I think I'm at the point where I don't need to do that anymore. I just need to enjoy and live life and see what happens.
It sounds a brilliant philosophy, actually, for keeping going. I mean, one of the things that you hear, or one hears a lot about with people of your generation in health, is how difficult it is, not just the burnout, but also the culture and the way that you're treated, and the the lack of diversity and the sexual harassment or misogyny or whatever. Have you had to deal with those things? How common are they for people of your stage coming through?
I'm just trying to think of my personal experience. I think, you know, we've all experienced some form, I don't know, of potentially prejudice or a few comments or what they call microaggressions. I think early when I was in my hospital training, I probably would say that I was bullied by some of the seniors, not the consultants, not even the registrars, but some of like this, one of the two of the senior house officers. And I didn't really know how to, I suppose, tackle it.
And I think, what sort of thing? Are you able to give an example?
It was just like a day-to-day grinding of this isn't good enough, or this isn't correct, or, you know, just really grinding me down in terms of my confidence and making me self-doubt myself. You know, because we're all learning, and I personally felt that, you know, something should have been a bit kinder to me in a way, not to baby me, but just be a bit kinder. And when I looked at the treatment of some of the other doctors, it wasn't that way. So, but then you're not sure, are you? You know, is it because you aren't that good, or you're not trying hard enough, or, you know, all these things kind of go through your mind. And then how do you raise a concern of, you know, I'm being potentially bullied or harassed. So I think there's a lot of questions that go through your mind, and then, you know, your rotations are very quick in a way. So 4 months, I spent 2 months in cardiology, 2 months in stroke as an F1. So then you move on to someone else and maybe have a better experience. So I think even, and it took me a while to maybe say that this probably was me being bullied. I think, you know, you're going through it every day, and you're not sure if it is bullying or harassment, but you just.
So do you think everybody is bullied? Do you think everybody's bullied, or do you think that there was something that made people want to bully you?
I don't think everyone was bullied.
It's interesting because a lot of the women I talk to do give examples or feel as if they've been bullied on their way through. I don't think you're alone, and people don't generally, our approach is to pick yourself up, dust yourself down, and as your colleague said to you early on, you've just got to man up and get through it. I think that's quite common. Is that?
Yeah.
Is it? I don't know.
I'm not sure. Here's the short answer. I think because I was always lacking in confidence in myself. So I always wondered if, you know, maybe I was below my peers and maybe that's why I was targeted. But that could have been completely rubbish. But because if you're that type of person, if you're maybe a perfectionist or you lack confidence anyway, then when someone is constantly on at you every day, then, you know, you question, you know, maybe it is me, maybe it is, I'm just not that great a doctor, I'm not good enough. So like I said, because it was relentless and I did look at other people and I could see that they weren't being treated that way, then over time I realized that it probably wasn't a great way to be treated. There was another doctor actually who had a similar treatment from that same doctor who I felt was bullying me, and we did try to really actually raise it, I remember actually, but she led it and I was more in the background. And I think there was some kind of discussion, but, you know, nothing really kind of came of it. And again, because it wasn't really identified as bullying, or, you know, it wasn't really given a name, it was more difficult to kind of address. But yeah, I think it's difficult, isn't it? But I think if people do have concerns, I always say to them, try and speak to your supervisor, or try and speak to someone in medicine or outside of it. It's always good to just get another perspective, because like I said, sometimes you have these questions and if you don't share them with someone else, then, you know, you'll never know if it is in your head or if it is actually happening and if it is valid. You know, there's a valid kind of
It sounds like you learned that the hard way, really.
Like a lot of things.
I mean, to me, it shouldn't have been like that.
No, I mean, you know, I think it's just it makes you as a person, doesn't it? And you learn from it, you reflect on it, and then you can share your experience with other people. So I always try to turn not so nice experiences into more positive experiences. Like when I failed my GP exam, and, you know, who wants to talk about failure? I never failed an exam before. But now I did a YouTube video on it and I've got lots of feedback from it, and people can, I can empathize and I can understand, I can share my experience with other people and, you know, make them feel like failure is, it's not that bad. It's okay. You know, we have to fail, but how will we get better and how will we learn? How will we reflect? So I think having experiences that are painful to go through in the immediate or short term, in the long term, are not as painful and can really not only help you, but help lots of other people as well. So that's how I try and spin those experiences around.
Fantastic. And so one of the other areas that is interesting to the other women, I assume, who are listening to the podcast, is how do you fit all of your now quite extensive portfolio of your writing and your poetry, and you just keep saying extra things that you're doing, like writing a book or et cetera. How do you fit all of that in, and how does it impact on your family life? Tell me about your family.
well, what I would say is that I've got a really good support network, which I've always had. My parents have been that solid foundation that have really enabled me to do that bit of extra homework or go to that extra class or course. You know, I got away with not doing certain chores because they knew I wanted to be a doctor and I was studying hard in my room. So, you know, they they allowed me to take that extra time. And even now, you know, I know I can rely on them, and I do rely on them heavily. and they really support me. You know, I'm married, I have a husband, I also have a brother as well, who again I rely on heavily. But I think those are the main characters in Patrice's story who I rely on very heavily. I have a 3.5-year-old, almost 4-year-old now, and one on the way, actually. And
congratulations.
Thank you. I'm just getting over those dreaded, horrible pregnancy symptoms. If it wasn't for, you know, my family being able to look after my son, drop him to nursery, collecting, things like that, I wouldn't be able to do half of the things that I'm able to do now. So I think a lot of the time, you know, you see someone who might look successful, who's doing all these 101 things, but it's the people behind them that enable them to be able to do those things. So I think my main supporters have been my parents, my brother, who, if I call him, I know he'll be able to help me with something or do something for me. And my husband, who helps me.
Yeah, because it's interesting. Some of the women that I've spoken to who've been incredibly successful in their careers are a little bit wistful about having to be so careers focused that they sometimes haven't had enough time to nurture the relationships with the people around them. It sounds to me like you're part of sort of a new generation that's getting the balance a lot better than we did.
I mean, again, for me, it has been tricky. I mean, as much as my family have supported me, yeah, there are times that I wish, you know, I didn't study as much and I had spent more time with my mom and had girly chats and spent more time with my brother and, you know, but I think they always understood. And, well, you know, we had lots of family time, you know, we did lots of things together. So there was that element. But yeah, I mean, I suppose sometimes I do get caught up. But for me, I've always made a very conscious effort, especially since having my son, because before having my son, I wasn't someone who always wanted children or who it was at the top of my list. Like, I was very career and I'm still very career driven. And but since getting married, and I'm Catholic also, so, you know, when you get married, you have to be open to the possibility of obviously having children. So once I had my son, I became very maternal, which I was not expecting. So I, you know, breastfed him for almost 2 years. You know, I even gave up my job so I could spend more time with him and just be there as a mum for him. So for me, I think since becoming a mum, I've been more conscious of spending more time with my family, in particular my son, because I, you know, I've spoken to, you know, other doctors, especially for my book also. And, you know, you hear that, don't you? You know, I wish I'd spent more time with my family. If only I had just given up one day or reduced my sessions, I would have had all that time just to spend with them. So I think I've always tried to listen to that and remember that. And like I said, once I had my son, I became a very different person, which I wasn't expecting. And I think that has helped me and still helped me to try and prioritize. So yeah, if I don't write a, you know, chapter of my book or whatever 1 month, it, you know, it happens. My book was meant to be out this year, but it's not.
Right. So brilliant.
Yeah. So although deadlines have to be pushed back, you know, I understand that because I have other commitments and I want to give them my all also.
Excellent. So we're coming to the end of our time now. So I just want to get you to answer two questions. One is, who has inspired you along the way? Who's helped and supported you? And then the second, which sort of goes with it, is what would you say to inspire some of the people that are coming up who are maybe wanting to have a career a bit more like yours?
So the first part is, who has inspired me? I think there's been lots of people. I think when you asked me in the beginning, kind of why did I choose medicine? I remember reading about Dr. Bernardo. And I remember it was a very short book I had at school. And he said that I think there was a child that he kind of turned away and the child had died. And I think that's what was one of the things that spurred him on to setting up his charity. So I think I always admired Dr. Bernardo, and then characters like Mary Seacole, and just their commitment to helping us and to change. And then I think I'm always just inspired by, you know, people who's, like you said, are doing lots of things and achieving so much. And obviously my family, who have invested in me, sacrificed, however you want to flip it. And like I said, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be able to be where I am now. So I think a combination of people have inspired and continue to inspire me. And then what would I say to other people who want to maybe have some kind of portfolio career? What I would say is that all the things that I do are the things that I enjoy. I realized a long time ago that my life would be very miserable if I ended up pursuing something that I wasn't 100% passionate about, or if I ended up listening to other people or what they thought of me. I know that part-time working is still kind of stigmatized today, portfolio careers. It's more of like this buzzword that people tend to throw around. But doctors have had portfolio careers for centuries now. You know, there were doctors who were surgeons and writers and poets. And I think it seems like a new term, but it isn't. So what I would say is that follow your passion, follow the things that you enjoy. And that I always say you have to live, it's your life, and you have to live with decisions that you make. You know, you have a conscience, you know, you have to get up every day and look at yourself in the mirror. So just try and listen to your inner self and follow your heart. Yes, listen to guidance, but you know, life's really too short to not be happy with what you're doing. So my portfolio career is just an amalgamation of all the things that I really enjoy doing, and that's what keeps me going, and that's why I keep doing them.
Fantastic. And you're an example of how it's never too early to start thinking about what your portfolio should include. So Patrice, it's been really lovely talking to you. Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Well, thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Medical Women Talking with me, Jane Dacre. If you wish to hear more conversations with medical women, then check out the other seasons of this podcast series. And thank you for listening.